she got 2.5 clients in 1 week of working with us. It was $10,800 in the door in 1 week. And then she kept going. She ended up getting $30,000 in 12 weeks. We started a coaching business on a dime.
What if you could go from being a single parent with tens of thousands in debt to building a multi-million dollar business in just under 2 years, all without paid ads? Today's guest, Jean Omelour, is a powerhouse business strategist and executive coach who's helped thousands of entrepreneurs break income ceilings by mastering their mindset and playing the organic marketing game. John, welcome on Behind Their Success.
Hey, great to be here, Peyton.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Okay, so I'm a business coach for coaches and consultants, and we are experts, I'd say at this point, because I think that expertise comes from experience. So we're experts at helping coaches and consultants to either start, build, or grow. So, or all three. So sometimes there are new people that are just starting a coaching or consulting business, or they've been coaching or consulting for a while, and then we are helping them to build their businesses.
Take us back to the beginning, right? So you aren't always this successful consultant, right? So give us kind of the origin story of where you began.
I was just thinking about that this morning. I've come a long way. No, I was not always successful. In fact, I think that's the beauty of it is that it's hard for people to relate to other people if that person just was always successful, because then people can say, well, I'm not you because I'm not, you know, a successful person. So the beauty of it is that I was not successful. I had been already coaching for 8 years, and I'd made some money, and people probably would think that's fairly successful. But then I moved to another part of the States, and it was really hard to get clients there because this part of the States in the Midwest, people don't really invest in themselves. And so in New York, I was getting clients fairly easily. And I mean, I had to go out and network, so it wasn't that easy, but at least I could see the results of my, you know, labors, the fruits of my labor. But then I moved to this other area, and I realized I had a classic problem of great service, not the right market. And if you have a great service and not the right market, you know, you can't sell ice to Eskimos because, or they don't need it. So I realized I needed to do something. I was in deep debt 6 years ago. I was 54 years old. I'm now 60, and two kids, solo parent. And I just thought, I need to do something, and I need to figure this out. And it was overwhelming, to be honest. It was more than overwhelming. It was like, what do I do? It wasn't, oh, I know I'll do that and I'll do that. It was, I really just don't know how to fix this, and I got to figure that out. So it's that worst case scenario where you don't have a, well, if I do this, it's probably going to work, or there was no answer. So I had to create an answer, and I thought, well, I've got to get online and I've got to figure that out somehow. And I thought the way was ads, because that's all I'd heard about. And I was sort of shying away from that because I know that ads can be a money pit, but I thought, okay, if that's the way, then I've got to just do this. So I got online and I paid $10,000 for not a good program, but at least it got me online. And I always make lemonade with lemons all day long. And I thought, well, I'm online now. Okay, now what do I do? Ads weren't working for the people in that program. And I just thought, wow, this is now going to be more and more debt. And then what do I do? So I said to the people in the program, I don't think ads are going to work for me. They said, oh, no, no, they won't work for you, because you just got online. And I said, well, great. So what do I do? And they said, well, you got to do organic. And I didn't even know what that was. I didn't even know that you could get clients online without spending money on ads. That's how naive I was about online marketing, because I was an offline person, you know, the networking speaking gig person. So I said, okay, is that like carrots? And they're like, no, it's not like carrots. And I said, what is this organic marketing? And they said, basically, it's marketing without paying for ads. I said, great. Where are the trainings? I said, oh, we have no trainings. I said, great. What do I do? They said, just go talk to people.
Go talk to people.
Four words of coaching. And I thought, okay, I got to take those four words and I have to be the best talker to people out there, because I need to change. I need to fix this. And if that's the only way, then that's the way. But it was a revelation for me, because I didn't know that you didn't have to actually have ads to get people to buy from you. So I went out there and I just spoke to like 900 people in 8 weeks. And I got a lot of information about what's not working for people. And I realized of all the people I spoke with, because I used to just be coaching all sorts of entrepreneurs and businesses and, you know, law firms. I coached, you know, fairly big companies. I realized that coaches and consultants are all completely lost. Most of them are pretending they're making, you know, getting clients, and they're not. And a lot of them are supposed to be, you know, game changers, agents of change, right? Change agents. And it wasn't working for them. And I thought, that's so painful to be in a situation where you're pretending to the world that you're all successful because, you know, you want to get clients, and you can't say, well, you know, actually, I'm not.
Yeah, right.
Right. I'm a life coach, but I hate my life, and I'm not making any money, you know, or I'm a business coach. You know, at least I had been successful, you know, offline, not as much as I am now, but I knew I was a good coach. Anyway, the rest is history. I got my first client, and he said to me, have you had a client, you know, with this exact thing? I said, no, actually, I haven't. He said, so you don't have any testimonials? I said, not for this. I have testimonials for general business coaching, but I'm not going to lie to you. No, you'd be my first client. He said, well, I can't believe that you're honest and you didn't lie to me to get a client, so I'll hire you. So it just goes to show, when people like you and trust you, they'll give you a chance if they believe in you. And he said, I believe this is going to work. And it did. He went out and got his first 30K client within a week. And I thought, wow, okay. And then I just started getting a flood of clients because people loved the simplicity of what I do. It's simple. It's not funnels and dealing with people and all of that. So I figured this out 5 months before COVID, and thank goodness, I was positioned to help more people. And I got to $1 million in 17 months from stepping online at 92% profit. Now, as an accountant, you understand that somebody making 92% profit on $1 million is like most people making $4 or $5 million, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, it did probably even more than that.
Well, no, I mean, I think people are generally operating at about 20 or 25%.
Yeah. Depending on the industry, say your, you know, cost of goods. Yeah. 20, if you're selling any kind of product, it's like solid, I guess, or the benchmark. Mm. Degree.
Right. So then from there, we just started getting clients, and we figured out different platforms, because I started on Facebook, and then I figured out LinkedIn and then Instagram. And so we were just helping people, and we still are on all three. But I must say that LinkedIn really is the winner right now, that Facebook and Instagram have really cut down all sorts of stuff and block, and you can't add people and you can't talk to people, because I feel like they're mad that we're making money by not paying for ads. But LinkedIn, even though they have ads, we're paying for something called Sales Navigator. So they're still getting some money, and it is a business platform. So, you know, we don't have to sneak around on LinkedIn, you know, the other ones.
Yeah. LinkedIn, you know, of course, you know, I've gone pretty far down the organic, organic content creation. At least, you know, I'm really only like 2 years in, but I've lived on Facebook just like personally. So that's where I just naturally started spinning up kind of the personal brand on that. Mm. And you're right. I think Facebook's kind of hit and miss depending on what kind of market you're in, but LinkedIn, that's where everybody's at to do business. Mm. Right. Or like you said, you're that coach that's putting on that perfect front on LinkedIn, and how you got your whole life together. There's plenty of that over there on LinkedIn, for sure.
There's plenty of that everywhere, and I don't judge that. It's a problem that needs to be solved. And, you know, we are solving it for a lot of people, because they're just relieved that they are now not only helping people with their lives, but they can be aligned and say, you know, well, I actually have a healthy business, and everything changes. You just like, oh, relief. You're relieved. You know, I had a sense of relief. I finally have figured this out, you know. So me and my team, we really just want to create that relief that people, you know, can just live their lives, say, hey, you know, I am bringing in the money, and I don't get up feeling terrible about myself every day, because that's how bad it feels when your business isn't going well. I'm sure you've been through times like that, Peyton, where your business wasn't going great, right?
I mean, you know, to a degree, there's, you know, as a guy that is always pushing myself and always trying to go to the next level, I mean, I experience that all the time, right? Mm. Where I just keep raising my standards, and therefore, yeah, I'm going to plateau or hit walls that take me a little bit of time to break through. So, like, I put myself in that situation pretty consistently.
No, so do I. So do I. However, I've reached a sufficient level of success that I don't wake up every morning and thinking, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
Yeah, the big scarcity. Yeah, like the big scarcity and all that things. And yeah, I would say that's the first 7 years or something of entrepreneurship was real mm-hmm. scarcity mindset and just trying to prove myself or prove to mm-hmm. other people that aren't even alive anymore, you know, mm-hmm. I am successful, right? And, mm-hmm. and you know, that gets, yeah, anyway, part of my story. So say we got a lot of entrepreneur listeners here. Like, say they haven't done anything, you know, maybe mm-hmm. they own a business, run a business. Like, where would you tell them to just begin with this kind of stuff, like organic marketing, and where can they even start?
Well, this is the beauty of it. It's not hard. Everything is so hard out there. Oh, you know, just go build your email list. Really? That takes like 100 years, unless you're scraping, right? And sell to them. Really? Does that work? Yeah, it can work for people that have huge lists that have been doing it a while and are already pretty well known. But, you know, the idea of just go build your list and sell to them, that's going to take years. And by the way, why are they going to buy from you if you're not successful? Like, just building a list. So you're going to need a bigger boat. However, the beauty of this is that it's not hard. It's really not hard. So the first thing, well, I'm going to talk about coaches and consultants because that's what we do, okay? And we have actually have an accounting firm in my program because he realized that the organic would work for him. And I said, well, actually it would. I don't market to you guys, but yeah, sure. Of course we can coach you. We've had service providers, we had digital marketing firms. We don't actually go for that, but they're smart enough to think, wow, Jean's done this. Would this work for me? Well, yeah, actually it would. Okay. So, but we're marketing to coaches and consultants. Let's just say that you are in corporate and you're like, you know what? I really don't. Most people in corporate, the word most, I think I'm being accurate, do not love their jobs. Most people in corporate would love more freedom. That was demonstrated to us when they could all work from home. And now they don't want to go back to the office because they wanted the freedom of working from home. Because it sort of made them feel like, well, I'm kind of like my own business at home. And now a lot of the companies are insisting people go back into the office. They don't want to. They don't want to go back to office politics and having to see people that they don't really want to see every day and having to have inane conversations at the water cooler. I mean, really? Who wants that? Except for a very specific type of person that just loves wasting time at work. Nobody really likes that. And so like, well, you got to like speak to the people. And it's sort of like a job, you know, and a lot of people were like, wow, I'm so glad I don't have to do all that chit chat and just get to it, get my work done and have more free time. Better, right? So most people don't love their jobs. And even people in high level situations would prefer to have their own business if they knew it was going to bring money in. Let's say you're one of those people. We have helped people while they're still working start a coaching business or consulting business on the side so they can prove that it's going to work. And then they've been able to let their jobs go, or they've just quit and they've said, okay, now what do I do? I'm not saying to do one or the other. All we need to do with them is figure out what they're good at. What can they leverage that they already know? Okay. So example, one of my clients worked in HR. She was not a coach, but she did train and coach some of her colleagues as part of the job. Okay. She realized, hey, I'm pretty good at this. I actually like it. And I hate working. And I have 2 kids and I'm working nonstop and I want to do something else. So she went out and got some certification where they do not help you get clients. Although there was a whisper that they would help, but they don't. Okay. And then she got maybe 1 or 2 clients because of referrals. And then she's thinking, what do I do now? And she came to us and we got really clear on our offer. We got her out marketing. She's made over $300,000 in 4 months of working with us. It wasn't that hard, really. All she had to do was the work. And she said, you know, it's not like it's complicated. She goes, yeah, I'm working hard. Obviously, she's working hard. She got so many clients and she's servicing them and she's flying all over the place already. But, you know, it's not that hard. So let's look at somebody that didn't have such amazing results, because those are over the top results. Let's agree to that, right? Another more normal example, somebody comes in, she goes, Jean, I quit my job. I hated it. I was so burnt out. A lot of burnout talk at these days. A lot of people are burnt out. She said, it was so, I didn't love it. I thought, what do I do? And she said, I really just want to be a coach. What do we do? I said, let's get you an offer. We got her an offer. She figured out it was, you know, executive women. We got her a price. It was $4,500 for 12 sessions. Her very first client ever paid her $4,500. Okay, she goes out. She goes, okay, I'm just going to do this. She got 2.5 clients in 1 week of working with us. It's $10,800 in the door in 1 week. And then she kept going and we had to tweak her offer a bit because she realized she wanted to tweak it a bit. She ended up getting $30,000 in 12 weeks. We started a coaching business on a dime. So that is a very normal kind of example. Okay. So it, as you can see, if somebody can go and do this and start getting clients within a week, couldn't be that involved, right? There's no way you can do a lot of involved stuff that takes a lot of time and testing if people are getting clients already within a week. That's just to show you timeline. Of course, we don't promise that, but it's not that hard. What it is figure out who you can help. You'll need help with that, by the way, because people struggle with that. Mm-hmm. And some people go say, oh, I'm going to figure that out. And they spend 2 or 3 years just trying to figure it out. And I don't get that when they can just hire someone who's good at that and say, hey, let's just do this. Let's figure out your offer. Who's it for? What's the price? Boom. Now you have a potato that you're going to sell over and over again, a hot potato. You need something to sell over and over and over and over again. Even Alex Hormozi says that. He said, get one thing and sell it over and over and over again. Stop doing one thing and then another because they're losing focus. So really, all we're kind of helping people with is focus.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, even asking you, get the person that quits the job or you know, is finally fed up. And yeah, they just trying to get focused and clear and having a clear offer that you can communicate to a clear audience. Not a lot of people understand that, right? Or have even, you know, gone even near that deep. But like you said, it's not like this overly complicated thing necessarily. And here's the thing, the more simple it is, the better, really.
Agreed.
Because the more scalable it is and the more everything you can build on top of that. And I think we just, as humans, we try to make all this stuff way too complicated.
We do. The thing is, the more complicated something is, the more it's going to break.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, remember, like cars. You know, cars that have all this stuff going on in them. We all know that there's so many things that can break in those cars. There's always something breaking, right? Now, I have a Tesla. The Tesla is so unbelievably simple that hardly anything ever goes wrong with it. I'm not advertising for a Tesla. I'm just saying I've noticed with this car, as just an example, it's so simple. There's no spark plugs. There's just the battery. I hope it doesn't go off now. And I'm not saying, you know, of course, once the Tesla battery dies, you're kind of dead because you kind of spent a lot of money. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying on a day-to-day basis, very little goes wrong with my Tesla because there's not spark plugs, there's not engines, there's not, you know, fan belts, there's not radiators. All of that that I used to put up with and taking the car, there's much less can go wrong because there's fewer parts in it. And I've demonstrated in 4 years of having a Tesla, I've had very little servicing to do, very little, because there's very little, unless it's the whole battery just dies, you know, which could happen. And that's major. But, you know, there's not the transmission. You know, all those difficult things that happen in a car all over the place, there's always something going wrong, correct? And the continual oil changes and all of that, right? So same with an offer. People are thinking probably, I can't believe she's comparing a car to an offer. But it's the same pieces. You know, the more complicated, also the more complicated your funnel is, the more there's points where it can break. Say you have a funnel and there's the ads and there's the copy and there's this and there's the opt-in and then, you know, and that stops working. And then all of those things stop working in a very complicated funnel. You have to always be watching something, you know, the upsell, the downsell, everything. So complex. When you are doing things simply, there's very little that can go wrong. I mean, they can't go wrong really because you're just there. It's the offer. How much? You got that. You got your, you do your message, which I call the dolphin call. So the message is the dolphin call that you're a dolphin, they're a dolphin, and you're on their same radio frequency. Once you do that, you're good. Then it's just really your content, you're speaking to people, and your sales. Yeah, sure, stuff could go wrong with that because you don't know how to sell. You don't know how to speak to people, but it's much less. It's a very simple funnel.
Yeah. The more simple you keep in, to keep any and all of that, the more potential that actually has to scale, right? Like if you start a super complex system at like, you know, less than $1 million for the revenue, like to be able to scale that, it's going to get really gnarly, really fast, right? Mm-hmm. You said all the different breakpoints. And the way to build a business that can, extremely scale is that you do have that basic core offer that is like 90% of what you do. And anything can be placed on top of that and bolted on and whatnot. But like, it's really this core thing that is driving the scalability of the whole business.
Mm. Right. And then the thing about the Chinese menu, people get confused. When there's just so much on the menu, well, let me just look at my, I'll ask people, what's your offer? Oh, I'm not sure. Let me just pull up my offer suite. I'm like, you don't even know. There's so many. And then they start rattling off. Well, I have this. I have a 3 month, I have a 6 month. But with 6 month, you get that. And then there's 12 months. Then there's a this. And then they can get that. Some of it's done for you. Some is this. Some is group. And I'm after 5 minutes of hearing their offer, I'm confused. I would not want to buy because I don't even know what the offer is. It's like, I'm that person. If I go to a restaurant and there's too much on a menu, I'm paralyzed by choice. You know,
I see too many things on a menu and I think, man, they must not be very good at anything in particular. Right.
Right.
And my mind goes to immediately this restaurant, man, like how could they even have, 47 different choices and all of those even be quality.
Right. Well, they're not because, in New York, they have the diners. And the diners, especially the Greek diners, they're known for having hundreds of things. And a lot of it's frozen, It's not really good. But it's a diner. So you're like, okay, it's a diner. It's okay, right? But even at the diners, I remember I was like, wow, my friends would be like, Jean, just order. I said, there's just so much choice. Sometimes I say, okay, I'm just going to look at these two pages and limit it to that.
100%. I mean, just think about this, listeners, it's like the more complex you build that, the more and more people you need to manage that, to focus on that, it's going to break and you're definitely not going to get 90%+ margins on anything complicated. Right.
Right. Yeah. But human beings are simple. Okay, great. I love you, Jean. Okay. What do you want to do? You want to do this one or this one? Two choices. That's it. That's all we have. Two choices. You got this or this. And they're related, of course. It's just how much time it is. And of course, the year offer, we're doing way more, more coaching on many, many more different things, but not many, but a few different things. So it's clear, you want this. Do you need this or do you need this? Oh, yeah, I think I'll need that. Okay. So it's not hard to make a choice between one or the other. A human mind can say, okay, this or that. But if it's this or this, or this, or this, or this, or this. Which one? It's too hard now. Now they're paralyzed. Now they're going to say, well, I don't know. I have to think about all of that. And, seems complex. Seems like it's not going to work. And why are you doing so many different things?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Are you looking for a new tax experience? Looking for an advisor that actually brings you high-level ideas and proactively plans so you aren't overpaying your taxes? Or how about one that even just responds and communicates in a timely fashion? If any of that resonates with you, you probably just have a tax preparer and not a tax planner. And it is through the tax planning process where all the value is found. And when tax planning is done right, it has a positive return on investment. I'm Peyton Squires. I'm a CPA and owner of Squires Tax Planning. We work alongside entrepreneurs and high income earners, helping them pay the least amount of income taxes, both legally and ethically. We have saved our clients hundreds of thousands of dollars through specific strategies, and we guarantee we can find multiple tax strategies that your current tax preparer hasn't told you about. If that interests you, head over to squirestaxplanning.com. There you can take our free assessment to see how likely it is that you are overpaying on your income taxes. From there, you can also book a free tax discovery call with our team to see what it would look like to have us working for you.
Switching the conversation just to a bit of you, what kind of personal routines or whatnot in your life do you practice that helps you, helps you stay aligned and just ready to go every day?
Well, I pray for one thing every day. And I do a lot of mindset. So there's the prayer and then there's mindset. I do creative visualization. I do something called the instant shift technique where I wake up in the morning and I clear all icky feelings so that I can not have those in the back of my mind all day. Because you see, when you are having these feelings in the back of your mind all day about things that you wake up with and you're not aware of it, it does affect your performance. It affects your mood. It affects your happiness. So I in the morning, I think, okay, what's that feeling? Where is it coming from? And then I neutralize it all. And then you can turn up without that residual stuff, subconscious stuff playing out. And then I'll mix things up. Sometimes I'll do a different, I do a lot of gratitude as well. I have a gratitude practice. I write down what I'm grateful for every day, sometimes twice a day. So I think it, and I don't believe you have to do the same thing every day. I think that becomes then like a job. So I will mix it around sometimes, but I do pray every day and I do the instant shift every day to get myself to a point of neutrality with my emotions. And then I will, and then I do the gratitude, but then sometimes I'll do other things that I'm hearing about just to, you know, test them out or layer. And I do have a morning mindset ritual that I did for a long time, but then I took a break from it, but then I go back to it. Again, you don't want to make it like a job.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've kind of done similar things, you know, and I've added, taken away, you know, I think is really powerful and is having a routine. Well, you know, what exactly that routine is, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do. But what for me has been so powerful is, and I built those kind of morning routines, and now it's super easy for me to test something out or to stack it onto that, right? And see if I like it or not, right? Because if I can add it to my, like, just routine I do in the morning when I go to the gym and all those things and visualization, if that is so powerful, like in such a thing burned into my brain that I can easily habit stack now or add something to it, take something away from it. And I think when people hear all these different routines and whatnot, they think there's some magical thing to any of it, but it's really the power of routine and discipline and repetition that allows you to get your mind where it needs to be to perform.
For sure. And then, you know, I'll hear about something, you know, if you do something for 21 days, it can, you know, and then I was doing, you know, the Joe Dispenza for a while and breaking the habit of being yourself. So I think that experimenting with different things is also important, you know, because some of all of it has value, I think. But sometimes doing something different can shift it, because I think you can get into too much of a routine of what you're doing. Do you know what I mean? And then it's just like autopilot, right? So I try to mix it up a bit, but I do feel like being grateful every day, that's never going to get old, right? Ever. But also I heard about something. Sometimes I'll hear about different affirmations or something. And I heard about Steve Jobs's, you know, Steve Jobs's reality distortion field. Do you know about that?
You fill me in here.
Okay. Basically, they used to call it Steve Jobs' reality distortion field, because he would just get people on board with his sort of like unrealistic expectations, which actually would work. Yeah. And he would say to them, you know, go do this. Oh, that's impossible, Steve. There's no way we can do that. It's impossible. Yes. No, it's possible. It's possible. And then he'd say, don't be afraid. You can do this. And he'd just say, don't be afraid. You can do this. And he was very charismatic. And then when you see what people did produce by his mere charisma, of, you know, I believe in you, and it is reality shifting. Let's put it that way. And when you see that, you understand that what people say is impossible and in the real or in reality is not always the reality. The reality was the reality that he did say, hey, don't be afraid, you can do this. And they would produce stuff. Well, what's the reality now is the actual production, where people said that's impossible. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about. And that's why I have a post-it now that says, don't be afraid. You can do this to me. Don't be afraid. You can do this. Because I have goals, and then I'll like make them really like insane. And I'll say to myself, don't be afraid. You can do this. Because I've already done insane things that people think is almost impossible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not every single solo mom who is deep in debt and 54 years old who figures out how to become a millionaire in 17 months. It's not like everybody figures that out.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't think it's Mike Tyson or a lot of people have said this, but like, you know, everything's impossible until it isn't.
Right.
Like, you know, everything that's ever existed has been quote unquote impossible at some point.
Right. Look at AI. I wake up every day and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, thank goodness we are all in this together, because, you know, AI, what we're going through now is a revolution, for good or for bad. It's a revolution. Nobody's doubting that. And the changes already that are taking place and where it's going, I mean, it's scary. It's scary. And again, I'm thinking, thank goodness we're all in this together, because, you know, if I were in this alone, I'd be freaking out right now.
Yeah. And it's hopefully the world does come and try to face some of this stuff together. You know, I'm in the current situation. It seems like in many ways we're going into our own corners and, you know, fighting with each other. But
yeah. Yeah. There's also,
hopefully that's not the continuous.
Right. Well, there's also the whole, you know, Ray Dalio, you know, he believes that there's a 30% chance of civil war in America. And you're right with what's going on. I don't think that he's inaccurate in his, but the 30%
chance. He's not either, you know.
No, he's not either. He's not saying for sure it's going to happen. He just says, I believe that there, you know, is a 30% chance. That doesn't mean, that means we got, you know, we got a 90%, no, more than that, right, 30%. So we got a 70% chance that it won't happen. I'm betting on the 70%, hopefully.
Yeah. And for the listeners don't know, Ray Dalio is one of the largest
hedge fund in the world. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And known for his, just crazy amount of research and data and stuff that his team puts together. And he studied history. And yeah, he came out with a book a couple of years ago about the changing world orders and how empires rise and fall. His takeaway from, you know, the United States and current situation is like, you know, we check a lot of boxes of empires that are in their later stages, right?
Right.
And, you know, like he said, he's not saying it's something that's going to happen tomorrow necessarily, or even in any of our lifetimes. But just because it hasn't happened in your lifetime doesn't mean it's rare.
Right.
And that's, I think, the big thing to take away.
I think the big thing to take away is we should learn from COVID. That we never dreamt something like that would happen. And it did. So when people say, oh, that's never going to happen, I think we're not hearing people say that anymore. And that's never going to, you know, because we're pretty aware, well, anything can happen. AI, though, is not something that is directly related to like the state of affairs in a country. It's the whole world is going through an AI revolution. And, you know, it does make you, I mean, you know, people are already buying robots for their homes. There are people that are actually already, it's not like it's the future. The future is now. So I believe what we have to do is just like, don't worry, do what you can, what you have control over. And what we have control over is our livelihood right now. And we are in a unique situation where there is something called the online space, which we did not have before. And there is no way I would be where I am right now if the internet did not exist. There's just no way. The idea of someone being that successful as a lot of us are without the internet, let's look at that. We would have had to just build up these millions of dollars just by networking at your local networking place. It was unheard of that so much wealth was being created by being online. Because, you know, obviously I'm not the top paid coach in the world. I mean, I know a lot of coaches that make way more money than me. All of us would not be this wealthy or successful or helping as many people if we didn't have the internet. So we should just take a moment and see what resources we have and make hay while the sun shines. That's what I think. Right now, we are in a unique situation to make hay while the sun shines. So we should be really taking advantage before something shifts and then we can't make hay because the sun's not shining anymore. But at least we now have some backup. And I'm sure that you talk to your clients about that a lot. You get some backup.
Oh, yeah.
You get some
for sure.
Varied investments going, maybe buy some actual real estate because, well, people are still going to have to live somewhere. That's something that we are always going to need because we are humans in a human body and we are still going to need a house and shelter. So I'm not like an expert, but the way I see it is the one thing we are still going to need is a house or an apartment or a shelter. So
hopefully,
except
we go all the way to like Avatar where we're like living in tubes or whatever.
Well, okay. We can't own the tubes. And okay. Well, I mean I think we're not ready yet. Right.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And at that point, I think that it won't, at that point, nobody's even going to want to live at that point.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, everybody's just going to be living in Web3 and whatnot.
Right.
But yeah. I mean, you know, some of that's just a little dystopia.
Right. Maybe not for now, but for now, AI is taking place and we don't know how that's really going to change the online space. It might be that it makes it more difficult. It might be that I don't know, but I do know one thing.
Yeah,
I do know one thing for me. This is my opinion. I feel with all the bots and everything that I feel like there might be a situation, and I don't know, where human interaction might then become really at a premium.
Yeah, I think it already is.
But that's good because that's where coaching comes in, where do you really want? I mean, a lot of people are using ChatGPT as their psychologist, and it's mm-hmm. becoming a problem because they're confusing in their brain a person and a machine. So there's already a big problem. There are already suicides happening. So this is pretty new and we're already seeing the bad effects. So maybe people are going to understand, no, we do need a human being to speak to, and we're not going to get coaching from ChatGPT. And by the way, ChatGPT makes a lot of mistakes, lots of mistakes. I mean, there's so many. So anyway, I don't know. All I know is I'm making hay while the sun shines by helping as many people as possibly can. And I'm just staying in the moment. However, it's a shame that some people are going to look back and say, wow, why didn't I take advantage of that? I could have. I was too scared. And my whole thing is, don't be afraid. You can do this. That's it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's awesome. And yeah, and I'm right there with you. It's like you can sit around all day long and worry about or think about this. You have no idea. Nobody has any idea. How any of this stuff's going to play out. So it's like you said, just make hay while you can make hay and think through scenarios of how do I, you know, take care of myself, take care of my business, take care of my family, employees, you know, all those things. And to some degree, think of worst case scenarios, but diversify and think of different ways. You know, it's people that have online businesses and, you know, they sell everything on one platform and I don't know, for one reason or another, that platform says, see you later. And their whole business collapses. Right. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the entrepreneur's fault, right? Like you took this big risk and stayed on one place and you should have, or very well could have seen that coming. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of looking forward and being prepared. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, being present and just marching forward every day. Cause I mean, like what else can you even do?
Right. Well, I mean, the fact is I have a great life. So, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm not looking out for other people. Cause I am, I have a mission to help as many people to thrive, a purpose actually for the next 40 years. So beyond helping the coaches, I see what there are always going to be problems. So, and I don't know how that's going to take place, but I do have a mission to help as many people to thrive till I'm 99 years old. If I live that long, right? But you're correct about marketing avenues. If you have one marketing avenue, it's dependent upon something not breaking. You really have to have two, at least two, just in case one's not working so well. That's okay. Well, at least we have this one, keep that one, and then we find another one. There always has to be a backup. There should be a backup. I agree.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be five different marketing avenues, but at least two. You can start with one. You start with one, and then you know, don't worry too much. And then once you got,
yeah, you get really good. Yeah, get really, really good at one, right? Yeah. And then okay, well, maybe we open up this lane, right?
For sure, but not all three at once because then you're not focused,
and then you suck it all off.
Yeah, exactly. That's where people fall down. Jean, I'm writing a book. I'm like, okay, that's I'm doing the mathematics. Okay, that's going to be 6 months of your life. Okay, and then I'm doing this. Okay, and then and there's all these things, but they're not going all in on one to really master one. It's like trying to.
And all the winnings are really deep down one lane.
Right.
That's where all the gold's at.
Right. You do one thing and then you get really good. You get help and then you do it and you add another, but you don't let that one fall down because your attention that you needed all of it upon, you know, now is split. How is that go? And people say, oh, I'm just going to do this. And I'm thinking with what time? You can't add double time in your life unless you just stop sleeping. And if you stop sleeping, then you can't function. So there's a mathematics problem going on as well with leveraging time and energy of people doing things for you. I'm big on hiring people at the right time. And now with AI, I am looking at every single thing in our business as somebody's doing this, just a task that we can start building. We're building stuff that like, that's a task. Let's just have, so I'm building AI models with my tech person, just simple things that somebody's doing that. Okay. Let's just get that automated. Certain things we will never automate because we don't want to market with bots. We won't do that. It's all people. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've already seen marketing go just terribly wrong.
Right.
With stuff. And it's people, you know, most people, it's, well, at least the people I know, it's with good intentions and trying to do the stuff, but they realize it wasn't on brand and it wasn't what they thought they were. And so, yeah, there's marketing mistakes certainly pushing out there with AI. I see that.
For sure. I get, you know, I have a podcast as well, and I get several pitches a day, and they're all of them are written with AI, and so much so that I'll get a pitch from one person, okay, one marketing, you know, like PR person, and I'll get a pitch from a completely different person. And it's almost like they both got the same exact AI message using the same example. I thought, is this?
They both got the same download.
The same download. And I'm just like, wow, you can really tell when it's just an AI pitch, because they're just thinking, oh, this is great. Now we just use AI, but not great, because you can tell. Now, I love using AI, but then you have to always go back in and make it your own, but they're not doing that. And so I'm just thinking AI pitch, fake flattery, AI pitch. There's a lot of fake flattery going on. You're like, oh, and if you're already I can already tell that, and it's a turnoff, it's not working for them. They think they're saving time, but actually I'm just thinking, nope, no care at all was put into this email. Yeah. Because somebody said, hey, just use AI to do that. And then it's this weird flattery. So it's already not working in people's favor, and they don't even know that.
Yeah, that's where I said, you know, you made the comment earlier of like authenticity, human connection is going to be, I think, a premium. Mm-hmm. And it already is. People are already craving authentic, real things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see the word real and authentic in marketing all the time. Mm-hmm. I think there's always going to be that human need for connection, for sure.
For sure. I think we're going to go to the point where, well, I'm in a very good situation. I know that. I'm in a very good situation because we teach human connection. Organic marketing is not about, it's not about churning funnels and, you know, automations. And it's really about, and it works great. And I feel very lucky that I've stuck to what works, which is heart to heart conversations with real people. So, you know, I could have said, oh my goodness, I should go that way and automate everything, but I didn't. I did test ads. I didn't like them. They just didn't work. It was a lot of money, energy, and it was fake. So, and we tried to do them in a very real way. And people said, oh, I love your ads because they're real, but you tend to attract, make money online types with that. And what we're really attracting now is very high achievers from corporate. So clearly, you know, the speaking to people is really what works with the higher level mentality people, let's just say.
Yeah. I totally agree there. Got one last question for you. Mm-hmm. So if you could give a gift to any entrepreneur listening here, like give them one belief that you could like drive into their head right now, what would it be?
It would be a mix of what I just said. Don't be afraid. You can do this. Because that just, you know, and the other thing is you are worthy and ready right now. There's nothing you need to be or do or change. Basically, you're ready. What do you do? Go for it. You'll pick up stuff along the way that you need by hiring the right people. But this whole thing of creating this alter reality of the perfect situation or perfect person that's going to be, an entrepreneur. What works is massive, messy action. That's what works. Just like you are mud wrestling and you're not worried about getting lying on the ground with mud. If you get to that point where you get to that psychology of, I don't care how scrappy I am, that's where the success starts.
Yeah. What's that? I've heard Steve Harvey describe as, you got a little dog in you, right? You got sometimes, you know, when you're down at the, you know, the beginning, it's like, you gotta get a little scrappy and you gotta get a little, I mean, you gotta get that fire inside. Right. And I think society and culture and whatnot tries to drive us out of it, but it just naturally does drive it out of us. You just kind of reach down there and do it, which no one else can do that but you.
Right.
Well, John, this has been an amazing conversation. What is the best way people can connect with you, get to know more about you and your companies?
Well, there's always my website, Jeanne, JeanneOmlor.com/reviews. And you can see hundreds of client videos, testimonials, I really feel like the important thing is hearing from clients and not just us telling you what we do. You can always book a call there. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn, my name, on Instagram, if you want to watch a bunch of funny reels, or, you know, good reels. And I'm on Facebook, but probably the best place is LinkedIn.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you found it valuable, please rate, review, and share it. That is the best way to help us build this and reach more people. As we're trying to accomplish our goal of help creating more healthy, wealthy, and wise entrepreneurs. You can follow us on social media by searching for me, Payden Squires, or going to PaydenSquires.com. On the website and social media, we're always sharing tips of personal growth, and there we can actually interact. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.